I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The FT.
From the Financial Times, this is Hard Currency. All the noise in FX this week is being made by the dollar and the euro as monetary policy divergence beckons. But has anyone noticed what's been happening to the renminbi? Quietly but surely, the People's Bank of China has been engineering a further depreciation in its currency. Will it have the same effect as the shock fall in August that sent the market into a tailspin? Welcome to Hard Currency, the FT podcast that takes a deep dive into the week's events in FX, the world's biggest market. My name is Roger Blitz. This has been a week when, on top of another sharp upward move in the euro-dollar exchange rate, the oil price has again sent tremors through commodity currencies, and central bankers again complain about the market misreading their signals. But it's data out of China and a noticeable move by the central bank that really catches the eye. China's FX reserves in November fell by the third biggest monthly fall. Trade data made for depressing reading, and the PBOC shifted the reference rate for the renminbi to its lowest level in 4 years. With me to discuss the implications of this is Richard Benson, co-head of portfolio investments at the investment manager Millennium Global. Richard, the renminbi is on the way down again. Does that matter?
It definitely does matter, but it shouldn't be a big surprise. China needs to ease policy. China is trying to shift its economy from a export-led to a domestic consumption or high-value good-led economy. And that transition process seems to have been somewhat overcooked. Growth is below where they expect it to be. Therefore, they need to ease policy, and easing the currency is a key part of that.
Yeah, the renminbi has fallen, what, by about 5% since that August shock? What's the direction it's likely to head towards?
So if we look at the forwards market, the one-year forward has a little under 5% priced over the course of the next 12 months compared to the US dollar. And it's important that we address it against the US dollar, because what really matters for China is not renminbi against the US dollar, but the real effective trade-weighted currency appreciation or depreciation of China to get that easing impact.
So are there already that 5%?
So yeah, the forwards have 5% pricing. That seems to be quite reasonable. The reason markets panicked in August was the exogenous shock, the poor signalling by the central bank and the implications it had for macro risk markets. Markets don't like exogenous shocks. They don't like surprises. This move has been well telegraphed. The economic data has justified it. Perhaps what is the most notable thing is that the weakness we've seen this week, which has been more acute than in the last 3 or 4 weeks, has occurred when actually the US dollar has been weakening on a trade-weighted basis. So the weakest currency ex-China in the last week has been the US dollar. The Chinese currency has been more weak than the US dollar. So that's why I think we're talking about it now, and it's been so noticeable in the last week.
Yes, does the renminbi continue to alarm investors in general? I'm trying to get an idea about whether it's simply, it's not the level, but the pace it's going at that investors want to care about.
Yeah, I think, you know, a 5% trade-weighted currency movement shouldn't scare anybody in any currency if that occurs. We've moved 5% in the last week in the euro against the dollar, by way of example. What really scares people is if China is to tip into recession. Mm. By Chinese recession, I mean a sub 4% growth Chinese world. I don't think that's likely. I think the policy administration is looking for a 6.5% to 7.5% growth China. The reality is we're probably running something like 5.5% to 6% growth at the moment. That is why we're seeing easing. Easing in the currency strength or weakening the currency is part of that process and makes total sense.
So it really depends on whether you think China is going to have a hard landing or a soft landing. So the fall in the renminbi doesn't really tell us either of those things, does it?
No, I think it's also important to address when it is occurring. So China is desperately trying to liberalise its currency. Inclusion in the SDR is a key part of that. They've achieved that. They can tick the box and move forward now. That was achieved at the end of November. So as part of liberalizing your currency, you need to allow it to move. So allowing it to weaken by 5% on an annual basis is quite rational and normal.
And in the region, there are presumably opportunities if the renminbi is going to depreciate.
Yeah, I think very much so, because if we look in the region, I say that the forwards have about 5% priced, so there's little alpha to be extracted from that. But if we take, for example, Singapore, where about 20% of the Singaporean currency basket is actually pegged to the spot China currency rate. So irrespective of whether the monetary policy of Singapore eases policy, the growth realization in Singapore relative to Chinese growth slowdown, combined with Chinese currency weakness and its liquid transparency to the US dollar, means for us there's a greater opportunity in dollar Singapore than perhaps there is in dollar China forwards, and also perhaps in Korea, given trade and export exposures to the region as well in Korea.
Okay. And the other aspect of the rebalancing of the Chinese economy is, as the trade data told us this week, is a great deal of flooding in the commodities market, of a great deal of raw materials that China has been gathering up in recent years, and that has a knock-on effect on commodity FX. The question is it any different to what has been going on, say, for the past 12 to 18 months, or is there something more significant about this week?
No, I think we've had sustained overcapacity in the industrial sector in China. We saw that quite clearly in the trade data this week. What's perhaps a little bit different now is some of the typically commodity-linked currencies to those metals, iron ore vis-a-vis the Australian dollar. That correlation has broken down quite acutely in the last month. That's because there's been a re-rating of domestic rate expectations in Australia. That is probably broadly played out now. And actually, if we think about the Australian dollar, it's one of the few currencies which is actually overvalued on a PPP basis to the US dollar. So the sensitivity of Australia at these or lower levels in metals, as we look forward from an economic and a growth perspective, is quite acute.
Okay. Let's come back to euro. This issue about the signalling of central banks to the market. We had the Austrian Central Bank member of the ECB, Ewald Nowotny, have a go at the market for misreading the ECB's signals. My question is whether he's right or not. Something is really very wrong between the relationship, in the relationship between central banks and the market, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we've had very big challenges this year. You mentioned the ECB. We can go back to the SNB in January.
No,
where
let's not do that.
The Bank of England has its own challenges. Yeah. You know, Mark Carney's expression of interest rates being into sharper relief at the turn of the year. Luckily for him, he didn't mention the turn of which year, because actually markets have that price for the turn of next year now. The key thing is, I think for me, central banks don't have to tell the market what they're going to do. They have clear mandates. They have expertise.
They don't have to tell the markets what they're going to do, but they damn well do it, don't they?
Well, they probably are. They lead markets with a narrative, which is rational and is open communication. But the problem is, if you lead them with a narrative and the market movement, i.e. financial market conditions, starts influencing or downplaying the implications of what you're doing, you have a virtuous circle, a feedback loop.
Yes.
And you end up with the tail wagging the dog. The central bank should be the dog and the dog should wag the tail.
How's this going to change? It looks like both sides got to cool down. The central banks have got to stop over-communicating. The markets have got to stop overreacting.
Yeah, I think it's a pendulum, like most of these things. We've swung too far in one direction right now. What makes it particularly difficult for central banks is the importance in the cycle of financial market conditions at the moment, because we're at the zero bound, because the importance and that relative movement of financial markets influences policy so much. Next week, most likely, we exit the zero bound for the biggest central bank in the world, the most meaningful central bank in the world. I think as we move through 2016, Fed normalization will enable central bankers to be more open about the growth inflation mix as a driver of policy.
So you mean they're going to change the content of what they talk about? They're going to be much more talking about inflation. I thought they were pretty much talking about inflation all the time this year. But is the content of what they communicate going to change?
I think the simplicity of what they'll talk about will change. I think it'll
be more simple.
They'll be more simple and talk about the growth and inflation mix, which is their mandate. And that will transpire over the course of the year. And I think most importantly, the second half of next year is where actually the inflation mix can be very different from where we expect. A number of the biggest central banks in the world are close to their NARU, their non-accelerating rate of unemployment. The Fed at 5% unemployment is perhaps only a quarter away from such capacity measures. The Bank of England, very close to it as well. So if we get labour markets forcing labour price pressures in the market, and then if oil was to have a simple reversal of this year's decline, we'd have very favourable base effects for an uplift in inflation in the second half of next year.
That's probably one of the biggest tail risks of next year, is it?
Yeah, I would think so. And it's not priced. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.2%. The Fed is about to exit the zero bound, and the oil price is at 36.
I mean, my view is I think that it's more the market's fault, this breakdown in the relationship, that the market is overreacting. But it feels like that's just going to get worse next year. A new world of monetary policy divergence is going to be one that the market simply hasn't seen for a long time, and therefore it's just not going to know how to respond.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought the market has learned a lot of painful lessons this year, especially the S&B, I think probably the euro of the last week as well. So I think risk-reward, certainly in foreign exchange, becomes a very powerful driver of positions, being more tactical about exposures, more dynamic in the weighting of importance of factors will be the key to making alpha in 2016.
Richard, let's just finish off by talking about what went on with the euro dollar this week. As you say, a big 5% move. Is this a blip? Are we heading back into the kind of the trend of direction of lower euro? We were all talking about parity. If it is a blip, why was it a blip?
It was a blip because positioning was over its skis. Because to use a skiing analogy, people were off-piste. Right. The traders in emerging credit were short euro dollar FX because it was such a clear and visible story. At the end of the day, the ECB cut interest rates, and next week the FOMC will raise interest rates. The FOMC raise, I don't think, is fully priced in markets. Certainly the fixed income adjustment is fully priced. The adjustment in very vanilla interest rate differentials between Europe and the US changed only by about 10 basis points compared to these overcooked expectations. I think it was purely a positioning-led movement. We probably moved about double of what we should have done on the basis of the information. The quantitative FX community, the algorithmic traders, the trend models are forced unwinders based upon price. But as the dust settles, I think it's very clear and very visible. The most powerful driver of currencies over time is central bank policy divergence. And we see much more room for that as we move forward in the next week and in the next 6 months.
If you're an FX investor, should you get really excited about next Thursday and the opportunities, not after immediately after next Thursday, but the start of 2016?
I think it's steady as it goes. I think FX alpha is there, that we've got sustained higher levels of volatility in markets driven by uncertainty. And these are driven by economic fundamentals. So I think the prospect for FX returns in 2016 is high as a function of this differentiation. But I think the dynamic nature and the tactical nature of exploiting that is something which will be the main challenge for FX market participants in 2016.
Excellent. Richard, looking forward to 2016 already. Thanks to Richard Benson, co-head of portfolio investments at Millennium Global. So it's Fed hike next week, as we've been discussing. At least that's what we're all expecting. For the build-up to that event and all the implications for FX, please go to our website, ft.com/FX. And as ever, do let me know any thoughts you have about FX or this podcast by emailing me. I'm on roger.blitz, B-L-I-T-Z, at ft.com. Join us next week again for Hard Currency. Goodbye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy the FT's Banking Weekly. It's presented by me, Patrick Jenkins, the financial editor at the FT, and I'm joined by a team and an external guest every week. You can find this every Tuesday at ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.